Hey, all you listeners, before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to take care of a couple legal issues and a little forbearance of what you're about to listen to. Some podcasts are somewhat explicit and touch on some harsh topics when it comes to the mental health field. Listener discretion is advised. Also, for the legal purposes and the protection of our show and guests, we'd like to also remind you that all these stories that are shared by everyone on air are alleged events that have occurred. Please keep that in mind. And again, we enjoy having you here. So welcome and enjoy the show. This podcast is an entry door for those seeking a little hope that'll spark a flame. This is Spread Hope Like Fire, a broadcast brought to you by the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit here in the state of California. I'm your host, marriage and family therapist, Anthony Garcia. Please welcome. I'm glad you all joined us tonight. Again, I'd like to also remind everybody that this is a listener-supported podcast, which means it's supported by listeners like yourselves. The way in which we ask that you reach out and support us is head on over to that Apple Podcast Store. Search us up on the search bar, find us, give us the 5-star review, and please write a review in the comment section letting us know what you like about the show, leaving us encouragement. Those are in which the ways we ask for your support. Also, if you're listening over on Spotify, we are posting questions in regards to mental health so that we can get the conversation going. Please head over to Spotify and start listening and participating in those poll questions as well. Another way in which we ask that you can support the podcast is heading over to Amazon, looking up the Spread Hope Like Fire Therapeutic Workbook. I wrote it in regards to helping people process some of their thoughts and incorporating that into some journaling. It's very surface level. It's to get you going so you can get a better idea how to therapeutically journal so that maybe that could be one of your coping skills. Again, if you head over to Amazon, search the Spread Hope Like Fire Therapeutic Workbook. Any copy that you buy, all the proceeds are going to go right back into the foundation because we just believe, at least I believe, that this is that important to support. And believe me, all the support in which we have received thus far is very heartwhelming. I cannot thank everyone enough for all the likes, the support, the comments, and everything else that everybody else has kind of reached out and supported us with. Man, did I say support a lot. Before we get into the guest tonight, I would like to just address some questions in which I keep getting asked as to why I push the podcast, why I created the nonprofit, why I have my friends on here talking about very intimate things, very dark, troubling issues in their lives. And the reason is because we all feel and know that there's other people out there suffering. There's other people who have experienced the same things that we ourselves experienced, but on a deeper level, when we experience these traumas, a lot of the times we feel like we're alone. We were the only ones that went through this, and it can be so welcoming and so much weight lifted off your shoulders once you connect and hear somebody else's story of the trauma. And what I like to push on the podcast is we're doing this in a humanistic way. We're approaching trauma in a way that I haven't seen before, and many people that have come on the podcast haven't seen before, and I can't thank you enough for all the past guests that have come on and opened up. They all know how much it helps, how much we need this, and how important advocacy for mental health is to talk about their journeys. Everybody that's come on the podcast has had some positive interactions with people that have listened. They've created groups like Jacqueline. She came on. Jackie's one of the great ones that came on. Michelle, she's connected. All these people are connecting with others so that we're not alone. That's why we sit on air and we discuss these intimate, private things. That's why I got on here and started to talk about what I thought was my anxiety and depression. It was more so, there's got to be other people like me out there, and look at, we found each other. And I can't thank you enough all for coming together as a community and building this together. I can't do this alone. I do need your help. And so if you are new to the show, you can head over to spreadhopelikefire.com. That's our main page, website page, where you can get more information. You can get in contact with us. You can reach out and, you know, want to come on the show and share your experiences, become an advocate. There's a lot of things that we're working on right now, and we just need the support. We need all the listeners to share, like, comment, tell your friends about Spread Hope Like Fire, tell your ex-girlfriend, tell your current girlfriend, tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your crazy weird uncle, tell anybody that you can come up in contact with, tell them how good the show is. If you don't like the show, don't tell them anything. We'll just leave it between us. You know, what can I say, you know? We're all friends here. And if you'd like to connect to us with a more personal, intimate setting, you can always reach out to us through our social media, the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. You can find me over on Twitter, where I'm tweeting away bunch of nonsense. I'm just advocating for mental health over there. Anthony G MFT, that's my handle over on Twitter. Please come find us. Let's get the conversation going off, you know, off the podcast. Let's get this conversation going. Tonight's episode, I do need to bear caution with you and tell you, listener discretion is advised. I have a phenomenal friend, and I use that word very loosely. I met my friend John when I was about 15. Everybody that's heard my crazy wrestling stories about being in the wrestling business for a brief moment, John is one of the guys that I clicked with, connected with, had several matches, like some of the best wrestling matches I could possibly produce with the five moves that I had, and all my moves were all just ripoffs of literally all of the other WWE legends that I grew up watching. Like, I gave the Hogan leg drop, and John sold it like no other. So, you know, John, he comes on and he shares some very, very traumatic events that happened in his life, and he's advocating for us to get to a point where we can find resolve with the traumas that we have, because John shares a story in which this is what the ramifications of trauma can do, where, you know, certain things happen in someone's life and something bad can always happen. And he shares this in a manner that I wholeheartedly respect. He does his brother justice. He shares and honors his brother and his family with being able to open up and do something so bravely that a lot of people have trouble doing. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to not be able to come on a public podcast and share openly in hopes that somebody else is going to take this tragic event and use it to change their course in life so that they're not on that same direction. And that's, I love this. I love this about this podcast, is that that's what we're doing. We're urging you to go get treatment. We're urging you to ask for help. We're urging you to acknowledge that being human and suffering is okay. We don't have to do it alone, that we can do it together. And I'm very honored and blessed to have John the Phenomenon on the show. And so I'm going to stop blabbering on. I'm going to just throw it over to the podcast, the interview. I'm going to throw it over to the interview already in progress. And I hope you enjoy it. I'll see you right after. How do you see mental health fitting into this whole big picture? Because the way I see it is it's being neglected so much that we now are in this time that we're looking at, with our generation struggling, I think we're facing the greatest struggles.
Are we starting the podcast now?
We already started a long time ago.
Oh, did we?
Yeah. That's why I said we're doing pretty good without even doing it the formal way. Like, right. I'm going to keep that in with the whole, you know, what we talked about. If you're okay with it, the society, yeah, for sure. And, you know, being for sure. Opinionated is okay. It's just,
yeah, it is.
As long as you know.
It should be. So let's get to mental health real quick, and the pandemic and just in general of all the things that are going on. Let me talk about how I grew up. I grew up in Salinas, California. I'm 44 now. So back then there was no cell phones. There was no real hardcore video. I mean, there was Atari. I had an Atari. There was no, like I said, cell phones, technology wise. There was computers, but they weren't what they are today. Video games definitely aren't what they are today. Our outlets were the sun, getting out in the sun and going riding bikes, skateboards, hang out with your friends somewhere, not inside the house, and be home home before dark was my lifestyle when I was a kid. Would I come home before dark, after dark? Of course, like any naughty kid would, you know? But growing up in Salinas, California, it's a small city. It's basically like Santa Maria. It's a coastal city close to the ocean. And there's no real outlet for teens in that area. But today teens have an outlet that they can go through with their cell phone. They can reach their friends through their cell phone. They can have that connectivity to see things that weren't available to people like me at that age. And they can see all that stuff now, right? So in a sense, it's I don't want to say the word spoiled, but the accessibility to things is a lot easier, right? You would hear people say, like, older than me, like my parents or whatever, you would hear their friends talk about, oh, I used to have to walk to school like 3 miles in the rain, you know, or the snow, whatever, right? You would hear that. There's no problem with that these days. There's more accessibility to travel, you know, more accessibility to information. I mean, look, kids can't even write cursive now. You know, there's something that's been lost. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But just talking on the mental health issue too, the creation of the iPad and the cell phone and everything like that, for kids to get that information to them and do the things that they're doing. Steve Jobs, I don't know if this is true or not, but I did hear that he said that he wouldn't recommend giving that to his children. And for whatever reason, it was something that he was against because of the information that is given out. Is it true or is it not true? You know what I mean? So I'm going to share another crazy story. In 2013 is probably one of the worst years of my life. Speaking on mental health, I worked in Las Vegas at Club Marquee at the Cosmopolitan. Before that, I lived in LA. And in 2008, I was working at another nightclub called Vanguard in LA, Hollywood. And I get a phone call, and my brother got shot in the head, right? And it all happened because these two guys thought he was a gangbanger. My brother, you know, growing up in Salinas, there's so many different ways you can grow up. Like you said, you can end up going to jail, you know, getting somebody pregnant, you know, your aspiration in life, where is it really headed? Especially in a small town, you know, if you don't get the exposure to really want to be something more than what you see that's in front of you, or, you know, not really seeing anything besides having a family and getting a job, doing the 9-to-5 and just living a normal life. And that's okay for some people, but then there's people that aspire to do more, right? Mm-hmm. Living in Salinas, California, there's not really much of that you can do. You can join a band, you know, you can do martial arts, you can, you know, there's no real aspiration, I would say, or outlet for kids to get, you know, exposure to something that they can be like, I can be something more. You know, I can be an actor, I can be a wrestler, I can, you know, I can be a musician, you know, there's so many things that they can aspire to be. I can be a doctor, a nurse, whatever, right? You can aspire to do those normal things. I'm just saying, like, you know, do you want to see the world? You know, is anything that you want to do in life going to take you anywhere? You know, besides doing the 9 to 5. But let me finish my little story here about my brother. He was a hard ass. So he wasn't in no gang, but you know, you can dress gangster, you know, can dress like a thug and be taken as somebody that's in a gang. So he was riding his bike one day, and these guys knew who he was, but they were trying to join a gang without, you know, having permission to do something. Mm-hmm. So they rolled up on him and they go, "Hey, what gang, you know, what you claim?" And he's on his bike and they're pulling up right next to him. And my brother does a 360, or he makes a U-turn, and then they try to do a U-turn. So, so the passenger is like next to my brother, right, at first. Mm-hmm. And then my brother does a U-turn. They do a U-turn. So the passenger is the driver and the passenger are like separate ways. So, it goes to where they're following my brother still, and the passenger pulls out a gun, shoots at my brother, and it grazes his eye, and or like the side of his face, and he almost died. They said, like, you know, a centimeter more. What ended up happening, the passenger shot at my brother, almost killed my brother right there, but he ended up shooting the driver too, and the driver went and crashed into a house, left the gun somewhere on the ground, and the shooter ran, right? Mm-hmm. While this is going on, my brother's knocking on a bunch of doors trying to get help because he's bleeding. He ends up getting airlifted to Stanford Hospital. And they let him go. They said he was going to live, but he still had fragments of the bullet inside his skull. That caused TBI, traumatic brain injury. Mm-hmm. And he lived with it for years. So that was 2008 that happened. And they put him on different drugs, you know, to help him with that. Caused his blood pressure to go crazy and whatnot, you know, and he would have thoughts of craziness, you know. He'd look at somebody and he would think that they were after him or something. But on top of that, he was taking all these pills, but also he was using drugs, you know. I don't know who's seen this, but, you know, anybody that knows my brother, he was using drugs at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he went to go visit his girlfriend and they were fighting, and he left the house with her. She told him, you know, "We're done for, you know, I can't do this anymore." And, you know, cause my brother was already like super psycho. And, you know, my brother's like, he was one hard pill to swallow, you know, like he had his own problems. You know, he always had something to prove. And I told him that he didn't need to prove anything to anybody. You know, we all loved him for who he was, but at the same time, there was something going on in his head that, you know, like he wasn't good enough for anybody. So, he, you know, being the way that he was, and his girlfriend was telling him we're done for, you know, he ended up stabbing her to death. And then he went back to my house, my dad's house, and he went to tell my dad, "Hey, Dad, you got to help me." And he went to go get his shotgun. And he told my dad, come outside. And my dad's like, "What?" He's like, "You have to help me." And he showed him Luke, his girlfriend. And my dad was like, I have to call the cops, Daniel. I have to call the cops." And my brother was like, "No." And then my brother was like, "No." He then went to grab the shotgun and try to shoot himself. and he grazed himself. When my dad tried to grab the gun from him, he grazed himself. And my dad said, Daniel, don't do this. And he's like fighting with my dad over the gun. And he's telling my dad, I love you, you know. And he overpowers my dad, throws him over the couch. And my dad finally realized, you know, if I don't do something, I can be next. He ran out of the house and went to the neighbors and said, hey, you need to call 911. And, you know, my dad's sitting out there on the sidewalk, you know, and the cops are coming. And then next thing you know, my brother ended up taking his own life. And it was really hard on my dad because, you know, my dad was like, I could have done something more. You know, I could have, you know, if I paid attention more, you know, my dad kills himself every day over this whole situation, you know. But, you know, certain, how I treated my brother, you know, he was my little brother. I wanted him to be more, right? But at the same time, you know, I'm the older brother. I would pick on him, you know. But as we got older, as we get older, you know, you realize certain things about people, and you know, there's certain things that you don't have to do anymore. You know, you just grow up and you get out of it. And that's probably one of the things that I do to myself is I kick myself for not being there more for my brother, you know, when he needed help. But he would text me here and there on Facebook or whatever, and I'd be like, Daniel, you know, everybody loves you. You know, you just, you got to find, you know, what's good for yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. And he just, being in Salinas, there's the outlets that you have are short. You're going to become an alcoholic. You're going to become a drug addict. You know, something's going to happen to you if you don't have some sort of outlet, you know? Salinas is known as, for a long time, it was known as the teenage murder capital of the world. You know, I don't know if you know that or not, but you know, if you don't have that outlet, if you don't have something to look forward to, if you don't have an inspiration, you know, you're not going to see it. It's not going to be there for you. You know why? I'm sorry to say it. You know why? Well, because of the lifestyle that's out there, you have gangs out there, right? So that's all you're going to see. You want to be with your group of friends, and then your group of friends are all doing drugs, or they're with a girl or a bunch of girls and they're getting money because they're selling drugs. So that lifestyle is all you see, right? You see only this little bit of life, and it's a high life. It's a high life for that little community, right?
Yeah.
And there's nothing more that is there for anybody to see. You know, sure, they'll watch movies or something. Hopefully there's like some sort of spark in there, you know? And you know, even I totally agree with you know, sense of values that or morals that aren't there in the generations that have come after me.
It's here's the sad part, because if you trace it back and you just keep going in your family, you will just keep seeing the same freaking theme over and over. Dad's gone in the next generation, dad's gone in the generation after that, the next dad starts drinking, the drinking turns into cocaine, the cocaine turns into meth, the meth turns into violence, and it just keeps getting worse.
Yeah.
Where do you stop?
I heard this somewhere, is that even though you are a copy of your father and your mother, right, that somewhere in your DNA, in your genetics, the trauma that they felt is passed on to you in your genetics.
Yes, to a degree. Our body subconsciously stores all the trauma. And yeah. The problem I see is, like you said, we'll take Salinas and Santa Maria. Here's what happens in Santa Maria. We know what happens in Salinas. Same thing happens in Santa Maria. And people sit and complain, and then they keep asking the question. Have you ever heard of a guy named Dan Pena? He's an old guy. He's a billionaire. He's a motivational speaker. And there's a lot of things I don't agree with him on, because he's just a hard ass. But there's a lot of things I do agree with him on. And he always says, if you want to be a high performance person, he says, here's the problem I see. He says, if you show me your friends, I will show you your future. And he says, you want to know why your life is so fucked up right now? Look at your friends. All you got, you surround yourself with nothing but fucking bums who sit around gassing each other up to complain and gripe and never grow. And all you guys do is just sit and gas each other up to bitch and complain and never get anything done. He says, right. I'm sorry, but go for it then. But don't fucking complain when you have nothing to show for it. Right. If you want to change, fucking do something. If you want to make some money, go work for it. And that's not what I'm seeing in our society. Everybody's doing the finger pointing, not the thumbs, because the thumbs are the hardest thing to do, because you have to admit, I screwed up.
Yeah.
Taking responsibility is hard.
Yeah, well, I got quoted for this, and it was like, it was something that my dad told me, because he was reading about something. And it was that you are responsible for your own actions. If you go to jail, you went to jail because of your own actions. If you got an A in school, it's because of your own actions. It, you know, bad or good, it's because of your own actions. But there, in society today, we're not seeing that. We're not hearing that. We're hearing problems with, you know, racial injustice. You know, people saying, oh, this person, because this person is rich, they got ahead faster than the other person that is poor. But you do see poor people come up from the bottom to get on top. LeBron James is a prime example. You know, I hate the guy, but he's a prime example. You know what I'm saying? He's one of them. Apple Diapa, the Black Eyed Peas. He was in the slums of the Philippines, became a Black Eyed Pea, one of the world's freaking most famous bands. You know what I'm saying? So people can make their own futures the way they can. And one thing I do have to say too is that, you know, if you are, and am I religious? No. Am I a person of faith? Yes. And I think that prayer is a big thing that can help people get through the toughest times of their life. And God always has an answer for you, you know, no matter what you do, like he's there for you. You just got to, you know, knock and the door will be opened, you know, in anything that you do, there's answers for everything. You know, he loves us. He wants us to succeed, you know. And granted, you know, people have different things happening to them in life, and it's their strife in life. You know, it's how they deal with things in life. Now, I'm not saying like there's people that get cancer and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. They get diseases, autoimmune diseases, mental health diseases, all these things. To say that they chose that or they didn't choose that, you know. That's a whole nother thing. But you know what? I don't want to be like, oh, turn to God. Your answers will be, you know, given. I'm just saying, you know, for me, in everything that I do, I try to bring, you know, I try to make sure that, you know, I'm doing something in God's favor. Even, you know, when I know I'm doing something wrong, especially when I'm doing something wrong, I ask for forgiveness. I know what I'm doing wrong, but, you know, I'm trying to do the best I can. You know, I have my own problems. I have my own addictions. You know what I'm saying? And really what am I doing to make things better for myself? Is it this life that I want to prolong, or is it my eternal life that I want to make better? You know,
I love that.
You know
I
what
freaking
I'm saying?
Love that.
So when it comes to mental health, you know, like, go to God, you will find something there. You know, it doesn't matter what, you know, religion you are. It doesn't matter what, you know, political stance you have, or you know, what gender you are. You know, go to God. He'll give you answers, and you'll find it. When last year, when my grandmother passed away, it wasn't from COVID. I went out to Virginia when the height of COVID was like spreading around, you know, like in March. And I swear when I was on my way back, I caught it. Cause there was a flight attendant coughing right behind me, like that crazy, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, and I felt his cough like on me, and I was just like, he's directly right behind me. He didn't have to sit right behind me.
Yeah.
But I felt that, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get sick. I'm going to get sick. Right? I come home, and I'm thinking, I'm going to get sick. I'm going to get sick. And all of a sudden, my anxiety was so hard that I couldn't breathe for like 3 days. Now, did I have it or didn't I have it? It's really weird because they say that there's three things that are happening to you. Fever, the coughing, and you can't breathe, right? Mm-hmm. I had just the breathing problem. So was it a mental thing that was going on with me? I don't know, but it was really hard for me to breathe. It was constricting. I didn't have the fever. I didn't have the coughing. But it was, I had to pray to God, let me get through this, you know.
Yeah.
You know, forgive me for all my sins, you know, like, you know, thank you for everything, you know, but I want to live. I can't leave this world unsatisfied, you know. I can't leave this place, you know. I can't leave my wife and my kids alone, you know. They need me, you know. And I was just like, what am I going to do, you know. And I was like searching for answers. After like a week of it that passed by, I finally was able to breathe. I got my COVID test back and I was negative.
And I was like, there you go.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, what a relief. I cried, bro. I was like, wow, you know, I don't have it. But months later, my wife ended up getting it, and she was like coughing and crazy, you know, fever. But prior to that, in 2019, we all got sick in November, and I think that's when I really got it, when I got COVID the first time, because everything that they said, the chills, the headache, the can't breathing, the coughing, the uncrazy, like a crazy way of coughing, like I've never coughed like that before.
Yeah.
But going back to, you know, God and Jesus and you know, trying to maintain some sort of sanity, you know, by going through what I thought I had, even though it could have been a mental, it more than likely it was probably mental anxiety, you know. I still went to that place with God, and God actually, you know, he's like, you're gonna be okay, you know, like in his own way, you're gonna be okay. And people would, you know, I'm talking to my aunt, I think I'm gonna die, you know, and like, you know, it was crazy for me. And she was like telling me, you know, God doesn't give you anything that he doesn't think you can handle. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, and really, really, I found comfort in knowing, like, if I die, I'm going to be okay. My family will be okay. You know, you know, that was the fear, that like being in this realm of what we see, you know, it's all here, but it's not eternal. There's an afterlife. So this life, make it what you can, but you know, try to do good to others, you know.
Yeah.
You know, being John the Phenomenon, when I was wrestling, I wanted to be an inspiration, you know. I wanted to show people, hey, look, I can jump off the ropes, I can, you know, do the high flying, whatever. I can move however I want to, you know, and I can do all these things through Jesus Christ who strengthens me, you know. I wanted to show that, but you know what?
The sexiness overtook it.
no, what overtook it, and I'm not going to lie, you know, I mean, I did do drugs. I drank a lot, you know, but something happened to me when coming from the East Coast, going back to the West Coast. I said this in another podcast that I ended up getting a neurotoxin, and that's what the doctor called it. They didn't know what it was, but they said something's going on. You got like a neurotoxin of a sort, mm-hmm. and it can go away or it'll stick with you. For now, let's put you on some lorazepam. And I was like, okay. And kind of made it worse. Yeah, it made it worse. So I didn't like taking nothing, you know, at the time. But
that's a heavy drug.
Lorazepam?
Yeah.
So they gave me that and some sort of antibiotic. They thought that the antibiotic would help. I think it was a combo of both of them that made it way worse. But from that, you know, I tried to get in the ring and I couldn't. I was so winded, I couldn't breathe. And from that, it caused more problems. You know, like I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stay away from the ring. I'm going to stop with the anxiety because it was a lot, you know, from not being able to breathe. So yeah. Just not being able to breathe with the anxiety was bad. So I just was like, you know, I'm going to cut it out. I'll do whatever I can here and there, but stay away from it, you know, just from that standpoint. So my mental health was in jeopardy at that point, you know, and had to stop. Yeah. But, you know, you know what? I was just a blip in the wrestling world. I mean, I never made it to WWE. I was in the NWA, you know, on the East Coast. Nice. We did TV out there. You know, Billy Blade got his NWA thing out here with the APW as well. Yeah. But, you know, out there it felt more real for me because I was on TV, you know, with different outlets over there. So over there, I was like, yeah, finally, you know, that's pro. When you make it on TV, that's pro, right?
Yeah.
It was still indies. It was just on TV. But, you know, it was fun. It was a great experience. And I thought I can make a difference there. I can inspire people. One kid told me that I was on their desktop as their screensaver.
I was that's sweet.
Right? I was like, whoa. And I never got to take a picture with the kid. I was like,
that's crazy. If you're listening, I don't know, maybe if you are listening and that you hear John and you were that kid, hit John great. Up. Well, I'll put all his handles and everything and ads in the description box below.
For sure.
So
for sure.
You remember this one though from the wrestling days, the flying donut?
Oh, of course. Oh. Of course. I put you over with that one, so dude, that was like dude, we always talk about, like, whenever I see you on video, hey, what do you remember? The flying donut. That was the ish, you know? Like,
that was the best. That was like, I only had like four. Like, I think everybody just has four moves, and I was just lazy. Mine was an elbow, the flying donut, and I don't remember. I started doing all the WWF things, and like Billy would always tell me I wasn't allowed to do. Like, I was doing the rock bottoms, I was doing the people's elbow. I stone cold stunned R2K at one point, and then he hit me over the head with a broomstick. We're in a hardcore match.
No.
I didn't get it as bad. Tsunami was in a hardcore match with him. It was R2K, Infernal, and I think it was just them three. One of them hit Tsunami so hard with that same broomstick, it went and wrapped around his head. Like, legit, it just wrapped around his head, and Tsunami doesn't remember much after that.
Really? Was this at the gym?
Yeah, this was at the little gym.
This was at the little gym.
Yeah, we're taking it all serious and shit. Like,
I know, right?
Let me paint the picture for you, what we're talking about. So when we wrestled, we rented a room. My trainer, Billy Blade, rented a room from a gymnastics facility. This room barely fit the ring, and we put chairs in there for an audience. So you got to imagine, we're crammed in there. We're wrestling like 2 inches from the audience, and we're not really allowed to go over the ropes because we're going to kick someone in the face.
Right.
And it smelled like old nasty sweaty balls because we never washed the mats. We never did, and it's a wonder none of us got ringworm
or staff.
I know, or staff infection. Right. Like, it was nasty.
It was fun though.
It was the best time of my life, and I wish I could go back to it because that's like that's the best time of my life. Like, if I can just keep going and like reminiscing. Remember Tony Cutlip?
Yes, I talk to him. I talk to him every now and then. We're still friends.
So do I. I was reminiscing with him. I said, the last time I see, because it was on Facebook, I told him, the last time I seen you, you were cussing everybody out. Someone told you, and he was dressed in his ninja garb. Like, he had head to toe, he was covered, and he had his, and someone said, why are you so mad? Wrestling, it was like a fan. And it was before the show, and he's looked at the fan, he's like cussed him out. He's like, "You think this is real? You think this is fake?" He went out, and so as you walk out the door, there's this ramp, and it's made of cement, and he stood there, and he took a bump, which is he fell on his back, and he goes, does that look fake? Does that look fake, you fucking little kid?" And then he got in his Ford Escort, and with his ninja sword hanging out of the window, telling us to all fuck off. That's the last time I ever seen him.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and then when I connected with him on the Facebook, I was like, "Cutlip, where have you been? Like, last." And I told him a story. He goes, "Really? Is that the last time you seen me?" I was like, "Yeah, no shit. That's literally the last time I think anybody's seen you from like the wrestling days." I was like, I miss all of us like getting together and being able to do that. Like, we had the best times. Like, I remember you, Patty, and here you, Sunat, like all of us piling into cars and going down to Anaheim,
right?
The marketplace, and then screwing over Martin at the Strawberry Festival. He never booked me at the marketplace. He only booked me twice. But I love Martin. He's a funny guy. In order to understand the aspect of the wrestling business, you have to be able to experience it behind the scenes, because it's like a legit brotherhood. We fucking will fight tooth and nail with each other over a fucking spot. And a spot is just getting to get your moves in, making sure you look good. And you would sit there and you would fight and fight and fight. Some people you worked with very well. Yeah. I always got stuck with working with Mr. California. He did Billy's podcast, and he ended up hanging up on Billy. But yeah, I always wrestled Mr. California, because I think I was the only one that would tolerate his shit. Never, like, I would always go over spots with him, but I would never let him do them. He did this like wave thing and then wanted me to stare at his hand, and I would do off the wall things with him. And so one time he was supposed to slap me, I just went and he held his hand in front of my face, and I stepped back and I went up to him and I put my hand, and then I embraced his, like, I closed my hand into his, and I just held his hand. So he would look stupid. We both looked stupid. I didn't care. Yeah. I wanted him to look dumb, because he kept saying he was the king of hardcore. And so my whole trolling aspect came in. I'm like, I'm going to make him look like the most pansiest fucking wrestler I can think of. Like, I'm going to do off the wall things. Like, if he, I oversold his shit before Shawn Michaels oversold Hulk Hogan stuff. Like, I was legitimately this like fat kid, and Mr. California was this short, small Mexican guy. Like, he's a little guy.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there punching me, and I'm flying across the ring. I'm making him look completely like shit. And I'm like, and I always told Billy, if you don't want this to happen, stop booking me against him. And Billy just never stopped. I think the fans liked it, and I got over, so that's all that mattered.
You know? Right. The first time he wrestled me, he wanted to go over. He's like, "Who's going to go over me?" I go, "Really, dude?" He's all, "Oh, okay, fine, dick." I was like, "Really? Do you want to go over on me? You sure that's cool?" And he's like, "No."
There was one time I wrestled him in Napomo at the rec center that used to be there.
Yeah.
And he was complaining to Billy over and over that he wanted to win. He wanted to, because Roland Alexander was taking over CWA at the time, and it was turning into APW Central Coast.
Yeah.
And I had wrestled under a mask the two DJs, and I just did that for Billy just to do it. And then I wrestled Mr. California as me. And then he wanted to go over.
Huh? Yeah.
He wanted to go over, and he was complaining. And Billy's like, "Can you just let him go over? Because I'm tired of dealing with it. Oh, why do you keep booking him, dude?" I'm like, "He doesn't do anything. He doesn't add anything to the show. He just complains. And then he wants to always win." I said, "I'll let him win." And he goes, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll let him go over. I don't care." And so I let him do his stupid little moves. I was holding his hand, and he kept telling me, "Stop, don't make me look stupid, dude. This is important. Roland Alexander." I don't know why he was fanboying for Roland Alexander. And I was like, "Why are you being a mark, dude? Like, calm down."
Yeah.
And so I think what it was cheerleader Melissa was with him at the time. She came to the show to watch us. And I think he was trying to impress her. And I just wanted to make him look stupid because I was like, whatever. So, like, I had nothing to lose. I'm like, okay. And so I remember Rio Storm could not stop laughing at the fact of how shitty the match was and how he won. So here's how he won. He did his move. I didn't sell it. It's the California, I don't know what he did. And it's the California roll, I called it. And yeah. it's not the California roll. It's kind of similar to, like, I think the Stone Cold Stunner, but it's like a variation. I didn't sell it.
I think it was called the California Driver. I think
And so he tried to do a variation on me, and all I did was roll on my back, and I rolled out of it. And so I got out of the ring and I walked to the back and got counted. I told the ref, I'm gonna count me out. And it was, I think it was Arnell that was doing it. Arnell's like, what? I'm gonna count me out. He's gonna win. And he was okay. And I'm like, but do it fast. And he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I'm all, and I waved at everybody and I left. And Billy, he didn't care. He's like, well, he said he wanted to win. He never said how.
I think that was the same show that he put on that my music as the CKY. You want my Sawabo? That one, that song.
Yeah,
that was the same show, because that was the last time I saw a real Storm.
How would you say you had? Because you shared some pretty heavy stuff. How would you say you processed this to be able to cope with your brother?
Oh, for my brother, I blame myself for years. You know, I never really grieved hardcore. Like it was weird. I had one dream that was really weird about him. In grieving, I would say that I grieved in a dream. And it was really, really odd. It was an odd dream that he was in the act of killing himself. You know, nobody saw it, but in the dream, there was like three phases, like statues, mm-hmm. I guess, of him, and like on a red carpet. And I just went up to him, and in my dream, I was crying, and I was like, why did you do that? Why? Like, you know, you had so much going for you. You had so much more to do, you know? And then, you know, I blamed him for taking his girlfriend's life, you know? And then what was weird was that I realized I'm being watched by people or beings. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But these statues that represented my brother, it was really weird. These things wanted my emotion. Whoever was watching me in my dream, it was really weird. They wanted to see that emotion from me. So what was weird was that I stood up and I bowed to the statues, you know, and I did that as giving respect to my brother and like saying goodbye, you know, like I don't have to, you know, grieve about you anymore. I'm letting it go right here. You know, I yelled at you for that. I let it out right here in my dream. It was really weird. And then the statues got up. They were portraying my brother, but they got up. They were actors or whatever in my dream. Mm-hmm. And they got up and they walked away. And then like the crowd started like clapping and cheering. And then I woke up. I remember that vividly though, that dream. But you know, how I deal with it now is a lot easier because, you know, I went through the whole thing of telling him, you know, I love him before it all happened, you know, that he doesn't need to prove himself to anybody. You know, that, you know, we all love you, your family, you know, I got to tell him that. So, you know, I think before it all happened, I made my peace with him, but just how things happened, was very tragic, you know, it did a lot of things to my family, you know, and I mean, it happened. Here's the crazy thing. Grace, my wife, she had a similar thing happen to her. Her brother actually committed suicide too when we were in high school. I used to wrestle with him in high school, me and my brother. And when I met Grace, like, because I should have met her a long time ago, but I never did, you know? Yeah. And I met her at one of my martial arts gatherings, and we ended up talking, and we were going back to my house, and I said, wait, before we go inside my house, I have to tell you something. My brother killed himself inside here. So are you okay with going in there? And she's like, oh my gosh, my brother killed himself too. So we kind of had a bond there, you know, that kind of bonded us together. So we had something to relate to. You know what I mean? A common bond. And I guess because we had that common bond, I was able to find comfort in knowing that I wasn't alone in that situation. You know what I mean? So I guess that was another way that helped me cope with the situation. I mean, because you never really get over something like that. I mean, it's always going to stick with you, but you know, how you move on is really, how do you cope with it? You know, is really hard too. If anybody is dealing with it the most, it's probably my father, you know, because he was there, you know, when the whole thing happened, and you know, he saw everything, and well, he didn't witness my brother doing it to himself. He witnessed the aftermath, and I'm saying this on here. My father regrets not holding him as he was dying, but my brother was already gone, you know, and I'm like, Dad, there's no, you know, he was bleeding, you know, if you would have held him, you know, he's like that emotion that, like, I can feel my dad, like, you know, I should have held him while he was dying, you know, and I didn't do that. I should have embraced him. I regret not embracing my son while he was dying. And I was like, Dad, you were in shock. You know, what were you supposed to do? You know, what decisions at that time were you supposed to take? You know, like, I think that's my dad's biggest regret of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it goes deeper than that, you know, but still, for him to tell me when he told me, we were both in tears, you know, when he told me that, and it took a lot for him to tell me that, you know, and, you know, just sharing that kind of gives me a little bit of relief. I, you know, he might get mad that I shared it, but you know what, at the same time, it's one of those things that, how do you deal with something like that? For my dad, he has nightmares about the situation. Yeah. You know what I mean? For me, I don't have that type of situation going for myself, you know? I found my peace, I think, with it. You know, like, life goes on. The only thing I can do for my brother now is pray for him, you know, and hope that, you know, before he passed, that he knew that God was there, you know. I mean, it goes on to the Ten Commandments and, you know, taking your own life and all that. But, you know, people take their own lives in different ways, you know, whether they realize it or not. But, you know, for what he did, it's a little bit more on a heavier scale of morality there. So, you know, the only thing I can really do is pray for him and hope that he found God right before he did what he did, you know. So, 2013 was a bad year because right after that, my uncle passed away in the Philippines through the Hurricane Haiyan. Wow. And we lost him. Yeah, it was really weird. Roland Alexander passed away that same year.
Yeah, you did, huh?
Yep.
It's already been that long?
Yeah, it's been that long. So, you know, like, a lot of people that were important to me passed away that year. It was really odd. It was, I almost died myself. I ended up getting a staph infection, and if I didn't go to the doctor, I would have died in like 2 weeks, he said.
Were you wrestling at the old gym?
No, this was in here in Vegas.
I'm kidding. The old gym with the ring with the staph infection.
Yeah. I didn't get that. But yeah, no, I ended up getting an operation even, and you know, I thank goodness I lived, but it is what it is.
You have been, and especially in my wrestling days, but being able and accepted into the wrestling family, a lot of the times, and I'll share this with you, I've shared it with other guys that I wrestled with. I was going through some crazy shit in life. I didn't belong. I didn't want to live. And being around just like you, Jinhiryu, Tsunami, DV, like just being around my brothers, that was the one thing I think that saved my life that not many people know was you guys. Because I didn't want to be around. I didn't feel like I had a purpose. And yeah, it's just, it's fucking crazy that the impacts that we have on people's lives and we don't ever tell them. And this is one of my New Year's resolutions, is to start telling people more how they affected my life in a positive manner, because we are so prone to, well, you affected my life in such a negative manner. I am a terrible person because of you. I am who I am because of the wrestling community that I grew up in. You, I mean, you want to talk about morality, shit. You would never think that as crazy and carny as the wrestling business can get, where it's so cutthroat,
yeah,
you'll find the most loving, gentle guys you'll ever meet. Like when somebody tells you, I love you, brother,
yeah,
and you've been up and down the road with them, kind of, and you've shared that wrestling experience, it really means something.
Oh yeah, like, for sure.
To know that, you know, it's a brother, like, we'll fight, but it's funny because once somebody attacks us, it's like, no, that's our brother. Like, fuck you. We're going hard on you. Like, we're not giving up, that we're going to protect our brotherhood. And I just wanted to share that with you, that your entertainment with me, with the flying donut and putting up with all my antics. I know I was a shithead when I was younger.
No, and, not to me. You know, this I'm going to tell you this. My relationship with you back then was, I saw how people treated you, even though, like, you know, how you say, like, you felt like you didn't belong. I saw that. I did see that. So one of my lessons that, you know, I feel like, you know, because I teach martial arts. So in also doing martial arts, you have to see somebody where they're at mentally too. You have to know, you know, where their thought process is, how they're taking direction, right? So somebody can be into doing a move or not doing a move, right? So in wrestling, right, it's a dance. You're trying to make it, you're trying to do the best dance possible. And in order to do that, you both have to be in sync. You both have to make each other look good. So for you, when it came to you being in the ring with you, I wanted to make you look like $1 million, right? I mean, I already knew I could make myself look like $1 million.
Yeah.
But no, I'm just saying, back then, I guess part of the lesson for me when it came to some of you guys, but you especially, because, you know, you didn't, I already knew you didn't have the experience or anything that I had at the time. So part of my learning, my growth, was to help put you over in making you do what you do. You know, so in that was my learning. You know what I'm saying? And I saw where you were, and I was like, you know what? I can make Tony look, I can make him look awesome. And I did my best to make him do that. You know what I'm saying?
Everybody tooth and nail not to. I'm like, we're not fucking doing this.
Yeah. No, I remember that. I do remember that.
Five fucking moves here. Pick one.
No, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, you know, I know the talk backstage too with Billy is like, no, Tony ain't gonna do that. You know, so I was like, you know what? Let's make him do his best, feel his best, and freaking, you know, get in there. So, you know, he loves it just as much as we do, right?
Yeah.
And that was my lesson to myself, you know, in teaching.
I'll share with you why I was so hesitant to do what you guys said a lot of the times, because I was so young, so naive. It's Vinny Massaro's fault that I didn't listen to you guys. I'm not shitting you. It's Vinny's fault.
Are you serious? Because,
yeah. Fucking Vinny. When he started coming around, because Billy started bringing, like, Martine around, he started bringing Vinny around. Vinny did a training session with us one time, and he taught me a lot as to, you know, getting heat, like, just all the, I can't remember all the terminology because it's been a while, but all that goes into making a match what it is, he showed me a lot, you showed me a lot. And Gangrel was the one that showed me a lot too. Gangrel was the one that was like, hey, you know, because I even told him I have five moves. He goes, make those the five best moves you can possibly do.
Right.
Practice yep. those moves every single training. And then that's literally what he did. He sat and he took my elbows. He took my leg drop, my Hogan leg drops and all that. And, but anyways, Vinny, he ribbed me and, you know, Tsunami and me had a shitty match. And Vinny said, don't let Tsunami get over on you. Go cut a promo. Here's a chair. And I'm like, no, Billy, he's, I don't give a fuck. This is where you take your initiative. And he's like, right. And he knew I was terrible at cutting promos, but then he hands me the chair and it's not even a regular folding chair. It's the wooden part, like the hard. And I'm like, I can't hit Tsunami. Like I'm thinking in my head while I'm trying to cut this promo, worst promo ever. The only thing I remember saying is telling Tsunami at least something about being washed up and taking a shower. I don't remember. It was a shitty promo. And then I didn't even hit him with a chair. And Billy was so pissed. He goes, you went out with a fucking chair and you didn't even use it. Like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, Vinny gave me the wrong type of chair. And he goes, I don't care. You should have hit him at least with it. And Steve's all, I wouldn't. Tsunami's like, I'm not going to sell it. He goes, I wouldn't even let him hit me. We were so mad at each other at that point. But
really,
that's why I had trust issues within the backstage, like older guys, because I didn't know who to trust.
You didn't know if they were telling you the same shit, yeah. Real or not. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I get that. But I get that from Vinny too. So you know, Vinny is one of the most awesomest dudes out there that'll show you what's up. You know.
No, seriously, he's an asshole. But he does it in a manner, and I mean it in most respectful way. He's an asshole because he wants you to learn. He wants you to take the wrestling business seriously because that's what he does and that's what he expects. What he's doing is just protecting his love and his passion. I get that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, mostly anybody is wanting to do that. For me, I'm back into the wrestling business myself, but I'm in it in a production on the back end, like, you know, I'm doing production, but you know, I'll get in the ring and I'll practice, you know what I'm saying? Like just to try to get back into shape. And just know that I kind of still got it. And I still kind of got it, but I did hurt my back. So I was like, oh, better be careful there.
Yeah. You'll never catch me in a ring. Fuck that.
Yeah. But, you know, I miss Vinny by this much. I was gone at a martial arts gathering and he came to Vegas and wrestled at where I was like, oh my gosh, I missed him. But that would have been so cool to see Vinny. Like, it would have been like the best.
We need like a big reunion of all of us. Let's just see where we're all at. That'd
be well, so fun. I mean, I talked to Cutlip. He's, you know, he's a pastor.
I heard that.
Yeah. Out of the guys that I was with in Salinas, Mon Colin has a seed business
that he has. No way. That was the other guy I wrestled a lot, but I loved working with Colin because he would actually do shit with me.
Right. Colin actually wants to get a wrestling ring and start training again. And I got him all hyped up when I showed him the Godzilla versus King Kong thing. He's all, bro, you got in the ring. I want to get him back in the ring too. Let's do this. Come on. I was like, I don't know, man. But Bubba Slim, Cameron, he has a family, he has a son, and he's doing the family thing.
That's good.
Chuck is out in Sonora doing whatever, doing a job. He's nowhere near wanting to do anything with wrestling. Well, as far as I know, he's not doing anything with wrestling. Hank Hooligan ended up having, I want to say Parkinson's or something like that.
Oh, no way.
He's not getting back in the ring. MS, multiple sclerosis, I think. Parkinson's.
Your nerves are all messed up or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's the MS.
Yeah, he has MS. He lives with the commish, Ben.
Oh, Hitchcock. Really?
Yeah, he lives with him. Who else? Jim. Jimmy Blue is in Reading. He is a CrossFit trainer.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he's.
I should hit him up.
Who else? Gordon, Renee, who was the ninja warrior. He's just staying at home. You know, he's not doing anything. He's just chilling. His dad passed away, so he's just, you know, just chilling. But yeah, that's most of our crew. And I don't know if you knew Jin Kiri passed away.
Yeah, that was on my timeline. Like, I was thinking of, that's why I brought him up. I was thinking about him the other day because he came up on my timeline. I was like, as the kids say, hit different. It was fucking weird. It was like, it leaves your mind, but then you realize my friend that I have this time in life with is actually gone now. And it's like, I always said in the back of my mind, eventually I'm going to get together with all the guys I used to wrestle with. And then you hear that news and it's like, what? Like, life is real.
Yeah. I grew up with him. He was one of my best friends. And not gonna lie, me and him have had our problems, but he was still my brother to me. One of the craziest things too is that I called him on a whim. His mom answered. I was like, "Hey, how you guys doing? Oh, we're doing good. You want to talk to Scott? Yeah, let me talk to Scott." And I was like, he got on the phone and I'm like, "Hey, bro, what's up?" He's like, "Oh, not much, man. Just trying to get some sleep." I'm like, "Oh, okay, I'm sorry. You know what? I'll call you later, man. We'll talk later. We'll catch up." He's like, "Yeah, man, for sure. I love you." And like, as he said, "I love you," I hung up the phone. You know, next thing you know, 2 hours later, his mom said he's in the hospital. And he had a blood clot the size of a tomato, it said. And I was just like, "What?" And his father knew about, you know, his father knew he was brain dead. His mom didn't know that he was brain dead. And she like was holding on thinking he was going to pull through. And then the doctor, it's weird because the doctor told the father, not his mother who lives with him. And the dad didn't say nothing to the mom. And I was like, that is messed up. You know, I know Scott's dad. I know his mom like pretty well. His mom was like a mom to me. But, you know, just for that passing too, you know, it was like gone too soon, you know, like, you know, Scott had his demons too, though, you know, and, you know, everybody, I think does. if he would have went to the doctor, you know, he'd probably still be here, you know, but he was one of those that didn't want to go see the doctor for some reason. But yeah.
What I think, I'll let you go in a minute. What I know, no, I kept you for. So getting spiritual with you, because I fall into the same category. I totally cannot go into the structural religious aspect. When I changed my career choice, my life, I was at a breaking point where I wanted to kill myself again, and being in a dead end job as working at Target. The movie thing completely collapsed on me in 2008, and I was like working my ass off. That was my dream. I am so glad that God did not let that dream come to fruition, because that would have fucking broke. I would not be here. And I would have been on drugs or something. Like my inner trauma would have surfaced so harshly and so like predominantly, it would have taken over me and consumed me to where I would not be who I am today, because I literally prayed. I was in my car, in my driveway, crying and praying. I had not prayed. And we were taught, if you do not follow what God says in the Bible, he doesn't listen to you. He cuts off prayer from you, that you have no connection with God. And that in order for you to get that connection back, you must repent and be repentful. It fucked me up to a degree. And I had not prayed until then. I was a hardcore atheist. I said, there is no God. There can't be a God. Life is too screwed up to be for God. And I prayed and I said, you know, this was my commencement speech. I prayed for God to open the heavens, and I wanted this awe-inspiring, like, I have you and your life is now changed. And I said, the answers that I got were nothing. Like, I didn't hear nothing from him for a while. Like, I just went on with life, and I was like, well, see, I told you prayer didn't work. Mm-hmm. It worked because same thing, shitty job, terrible day, crying, and this time I'm crying, I'm breaking down in my car. I don't want to live. There's nothing to live for. And I just hear him, and he starts talking. He says, he told me, he goes, if you want to find me, I am not a person, a place, a tradition, or a religion. You're not going to find me down there. And I let all of it out. Like, I walked in the house, I had snot hanging out. I was just, I felt better because I said, like, I finally, I was like, I found, like, God came back to me. Everything that I was told was a lie. Like, God doesn't listen because you don't do this and you got to do this. And it's not about jumping through hoops. It's just believing in the grace of God. That's what I believe. It's like, you can't, to me, we can't sit and say, well, I do better and your sin's worse than that sin. Everything is sin. We're sin. Like, legit. Yeah. That's what we are. We can't, we were born sinners. Like, we can't
get out of it. We were born into sin. And this whole trial is what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to find that out.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. I love that I found out my calling and my passion so early on. And it helps me to be human because I notice a lot of people have that trouble of being human because it hurts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
that's just me. Ever since then, I was like, I'm okay now.
Trying to be real is a hard thing to do. You know, I mean, I have family that I can't be real with, you know, it's mm-hmm. that kind of sucks. And then there's family that you're like, yeah, we can do whatever, you know, like no time loss, whatever, you know, and it's like you put up a front in front of people like, oh, because you're so scared, you're going to get judged, you know, because you're family. And it shouldn't even be like that at all. You know, everybody has their own way, you know, and I believe the way that you found God, I'm not going to lie. I grew up first Catholic when I was a baby. Mm-hmm. Then from that, my mom found Jehovah's Witness. And then from that, she got turned over to Mormon. And I was Mormon for years. And then my friend was, one of my best friends is a Christian. Whatever, born again, whatever Christian race or religion there is. And to me, all the fruits of the Spirit are different. They're trying to go after the same thing. And the one thing that I found is that, you know, you have to have your own personal relationship with God. And that's between you and God. You can't let anybody else tell you that what you do is right or wrong. You know what you do is right or wrong. And you tell God, hey, God, this is what I'm doing. You know, and God already knows what you're doing. He sees it. You know, but your salvation, your own salvation, where you belong with God, he just wants to know that you're with him. You know, he wants to know that you are for him. You're not, you know, he doesn't want you to be a dick, you know, even though, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't
want you. It happens, though, you know.
No. What I mean is, like,
he
doesn't want you to impede on others in a bad way. You know, like, you can be hard on somebody to, I guess the word is tough love.
Yeah. Right?
In being hard on somebody. But, you know, other than that, you know, he doesn't want you to hurt somebody physically because that leaves trauma. I know that for a fact, you know.
Yeah.
It, for me, that my wrestling actually helped with that, I would say.
It's crazy, but it does help.
Yeah. You know, it my sadomasochism, like the pain that I got inflicted on myself was an outlet to take away the pain that I was feeling within myself at a time when I was wrestling. And then, you know what, over time I got over it, you know, But that was an outlet, I would say. That I think that's a mental health issue right there too, you know, sadomasochism, you know.
It can be. Depends on how far you want to take it. I mean,
yeah,
it can be fun and kinky in the room, but if you're outside in your front yard cutting yourself up with the
yeah, that's a little wood chipper,
that's a little different.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm like me being a martial artist, you know, like I think pain, so one of the sayings is pain is weakness leaving the body, right? Mm-hmm. That was one saying I heard. Another one was pain is fear leaving the body. I was like, which one sounds better? I don't know.
Oh, we'll debate that. Listeners, in the comment section, we could debate that.
Yeah. What is it? But yeah, man, freaking.
We have so much more to talk. Let's like do this again sometime. Like, sure. Like, I loved catching up with you. We can invite some other. Like, that would be cool. With like a Zoom, I could do a Zoom thing with more than one of us. Like two of us. We get maybe Tsunami. You can come on here. I don't know if you're listening. I doubt you're listening though.
I would love to talk to my little brother.
I know.
My little Shaka brother. Right? That would be so cool.
You guys are always my favorite tag team, even though you guys weren't official.
Yeah.
Were you guys official?
We were the Shaka brothers. That's what our tag team was, but it was never really, we never really got to do much, you know, like we wanted to. But
now I remember. It was like a short-lived thing. I remember you and Tsunami wrestled Parental Discretion at one time.
Yeah.
That was the best. Like you were doing you did the UFO into the scissor kick, not the scissor kick, the spin-a-rooney thing. And then Tsunami. And then Tsunami was it was fun. Like Tsunami was running like you guys, I think, were the revolutionary part of wrestling when it became like, let's entertain it. Like let's entertain people. Let's make it more fun. Like I remember Tsunami running the ropes and Mike and Devious trying to clothesline Tsunami. And Tsunami just kept ducking to the point where Devious and Mike Menace started fighting. And Tsunami just kept running. And he was getting like winded. And so you had to come in to the ring and stop him. So he would stop running the ropes and then you brought him to the corner and you're fanning him and then you gave him some water and you're like, I got this, hold on. And then you tagged in, right? And Mike and Devious turned to you and because they stopped fighting, you're like, and so you just step back out of the ring, you grab the water bottle and the towel and you put it back around your shoulders and you start drinking and you tag back out. That was fucking hilarious. I still remember that.
Yeah, bro, there's some pictures of me that are out there. I'm like, did I do that? There was a picture. There was a picture of me, Tsunami, and I can't remember who else, but we had a picture together where we wrestled against Bo, Scott, and somebody else. I can't remember, but. I was on the turnbuckle and they're right next to me. We were like, yeah. I was like, what? I was like, we took a picture like that? You know, it was just weird. Things that you don't see, learn, or remember. Yeah, those were the days.
So, before I let you go and drop all your anything you want to, like anything you're trying to plug, all your ads, all your handles, whatever the kids call it. So just, I'm going to shut up and you just.
I am John the Phenomenon. You can check me out on Facebook, John Doc Pano Jr. You can also check us out on Instagram, Go Freak Media, Go Freak Media TV on YouTube. You can also check out what I got going on as a production with Versus Pro Wrestling. You go to versusprowrestling.com, Versus Pro Wrestling Studios on Facebook. And yeah, check us out, man. I got more productions going on with more things happening. I do a lot of comic book review, toy review, all things cool.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, please check out John, and I'm gonna put all his links in the description so that you can easily access it. Again, I want to thank John for coming on. We are definitely gonna have him on, and I think what we're gonna do is we're gonna have a CWA type reunion.
That would be cool.
I think this is gonna be great. And yep. So for John, the motherfucking phenomenon, and Tony the Beat, I'm Tony the Beat. This is Spread Hope Like Fire.
I want to thank John, the phenomenon, for coming on tonight. It was a privilege. It was a privilege. And, you know, coming up on the show, we've got the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Anthony Brown of Brown Manor. He's an author as well, from Park Bench to Park Avenue. He's got an amazing story. He's going to be on the show. It's going to be a live podcast. It's going to be on YouTube and streaming on other platforms. So I encourage you to tune in. All I really have to say is, damn, that was a good interview. I love sitting with John, the phenomenon, and reminiscing about our wrestling journey, our wrestling careers, where life has taken us, where we've come from life. John, if you are listening, you better be, because, bro, you are one of the very few truest that I know, and I cannot thank you enough for doing me, the audience, those who are suffering in silence, thank you for doing this honor. Thank you for sharing your brother's story with us. I know for a fact this is going to change somebody's life. This is going to save somebody's life. Sharing our troubles, our traumas, our tribulations on here, and how we've managed to come out of that. That means the world. This right here is priceless. What we bring to the table is priceless, John. We can't, you and I, sit back and watch others struggle. We're those that want to help. We're those that want to get in there and really, really just make that life of somebody's different, improve it. You did that for me when I was a kid, man. Like, the laughter and all those good times. We're going to have to do this again. I swear. We're going to have to get John on again. But if you're new to the show, please remember, check the archived episodes. There's a plethora of information that we share and we talk about. We've had the different topics that we share. Trich Attila Mania with Jackie. We've talked about the Las Vegas shooting and PTSD with Michelle. We talked about gang violence and growing up in a maladaptive family and overcoming those obstacles and challenges and, you know, just sharing those life struggles. So if you're new here, check out the previous episodes and also like, share, subscribe. It really helps us here. Again, I can't emphasize enough that this podcast is presented in an educational format. So if you're feeling suicidal or, you know, needing some help with mental health, I would say the easiest way for me to suggest is, I know we're not sponsored, but head over to psychologytoday.com, type in your zip code, and poof, there's your list of providers, and you can pick which one you like and give them a call. That's the easiest way, psychologytoday.com. I know we're not sponsored. Again, this is a listener-supported podcast. I can't emphasize that. We cannot keep doing it without your support. So head over to Apple Podcast Store, leave that 5-star review, write something in the comment section. If you're listening to us anywhere else, please leave that like and review. If you're on YouTube listening to us, you know, hit that thumbs up, leave a comment. It helps the algorithm. So, for the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, John the Phenomenon, and Anthony Garcia, I'm Anthony Garcia, and we'll catch you next time. Take care of those you love. So getting back into that little wrestling bravado and how terrible I can't cut a promo, I'm going to try to cut one here because it's an open challenge, brothers. It's an open challenge to every one of you. All those California Wrestling Alliance brothers that I grew up with, the ones we talked about, Tsunami, Kid Omega, Devious, Mike Menes, all you that I've come in contact with, we need to have a reunion. Dark Dragon. We need to get back together. We need to have a podcast, like John and I said. Hit us up, man. And I know the listeners are going to want to hear this. We've got millions of stories that we could sit and talk about and tell. It would be a nice way for us to just get back in touch with one another. Caden Anthony's got his own podcast. I won't plug it until he comes on my podcast. So there's the open challenge. You see, I'm terrible at these promos. So guys, if you're listening, hit me up. Phone number's the same. Email's the same. Get a hold of me. And we'll make this happen. So, again, I Spread Hope Like Fire is a production of the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. As always, I like to remind everybody, the things that we discuss upon the podcast are not a substitute or a replacement for seeking treatment and getting professional help. If in fact you are struggling with your mental health, we urge you to please reach out to your community and see which professionals are accepting new clients and get that professional help and talking to that professional that you need. This show is intended as a educational and informational psychoeducation of the field of psychology. For Spread Hope Like Fire and Anthony G, I'm Anthony G, and we will see you later.